When the Cuban Revolution triumphed in 1959, it sought to end the neocolonial economic and political domination of the United States over the nation. To this end, in 1959 and 1960, it nationalized extensive lands owned by U.S. companies, and it nationalized U.S. industries and banks. In addition, having taken power from the politicians who were compliant with U.S. interests, it established direct popular democracy, placing the political process under the control of delegates of the people. The neocolonial world system does not have space for such audacity. It requires the political subservience of supposedly sovereign nations so that their land, labor, and markets can be accessed by international corporations. A triumphant anti-neocolonial revolution cannot be allowed to stand. It takes control over its own natural resources and economic system, and it serves as a bad example for the neocolonized peoples of the world, who constitute the majority of humanity. The long-standing aggression of the United States has its imperialist logic, but that logic came up against the unity, the political intelligence, and the commitment of the Cuban Revolution. In the 1970s, the United States was moving toward acceptance of revolutionary Cuba as part of its global strategy of coexistence with the socialist world. However, as the neocolonial world system entered a sustained structural crisis in the 1970s, and as the USA began to experience a commercial decline relative to other global powers, there emerged a radical right-wing current of thought that wanted to restore U.S. dominance in the world. These neoconservatives attained positions of influence in the administrations of Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, and Donald Trump. In the global war that they have envisioned, Cuba, persistent in its socialism and in its sovereignty, is an important field of battle. The Trump administration's economic aggressions against Cuba merely continue historic hostile policies against the Cuban Revolution, but it takes them to a new extreme, including extraterritorial measures involving efforts to prevent companies from other nations from trading with Cuba. On September 11th, these new and more extreme steps were explained to the Cuban people by President Miguel Díaz-Canel on a special edition of the nightly news program, The Roundtable. He stated, "They are trying to impede the arrival of fuel to Cuba, to prevent the arrival of oil tankers to the ports of Cuba, and therefore they strongly threaten the shipping companies and the governments where the ships are registered, that have businesses with Cuba, and the insurance companies responsible for insuring the commercial operations. In addition, the application of unilateral and extraterritorial measures of the Helms-Burton Law against companies that have business in Cuba have limited the contractual agreements with shipping companies that bring fuel to Cuba. The current U.S. administration has intimidated and pressured, and there are entities that have withdrawn because they feel threatened before so many threats." Díaz-Canel informed the people that these aggressive U.S. measures have created a temporary situation of low availability of diesel fuel. The president appeared on the roundtable on September 11th and 12th with other members of the Council of State and of Ministers. They explained the measures that are being taken to respond to the temporary shortage of diesel fuel, including the reduction of intercity bus routes and the bus routes of the city of Havana, a suspension of the production of steel, which consumes high levels of energy, and the implementation of strategies of reduction of energy consumption in all places of work, including production in hours other than those of peak energy demand, and using internet to work at home. Díaz-Canel and Alejandro Gil, the Minister of Economy and Planning, stressed that the measures are temporary, the Cuban government has been able to make contractual agreements for the delivery of fuel in late September, and the situation is expected to return to normal in October. Hill noted, however, that the United States will continue its aggression and further problems are possible. In response to questions, the president maintained that the nation is not entering another special period. Conditions are entirely different from what they were in the 1990s following the collapse of the Soviet Union and the socialist bloc. Today, unlike the 1990s, Cuba produces 40% of its petroleum. The country has a strong and growing tourist sector, which generates international currency. Cuba has developed the exportation of medical services and medical technologies, another source of international currency. Cuba has alliances of cooperation, including with the European Union, which is committed to defending the companies that do business in Cuba. Cuba has continually increasing foreign investment in areas such as nickel, petroleum, mining, and tourism. Cuba has commercial relations with Venezuela, Russia, China, Vietnam, the countries of the European Union, the countries of Latin America and the Caribbean, and various African countries. These conditions are very different from the early 1990s. Today, Cuba has a diverse economy, and it is inserted into the world economy. Cuba is not isolated, not even remotely. Here in Cuba, one can plainly see that the government, the party, and the people are responding to this latest challenge with the same commitment and sacrifice that has defined their persistent revolutionary struggle for decades. They are going forward with determination, confidence, a positive spirit, and a commitment to their socialist project and their nation. They have the conviction that their road is that of the true and the right, and it will ultimately prevail. For the United States to become aware of the folly of its aggression, it has to arrive to understand that the neocolonial world system is not sustainable, and imperialist policies are no longer workable in the context of the world of today. The nations of the world have become increasingly economically interdependent, creating the need for cooperation. At the same time, all of humanity confronts serious common problems which must be addressed together. Moreover, the neo-colonized peoples of the world are increasingly unwilling to accept their colonized situation, and their persistent demands for a more just international economic order can no longer be ignored. The only possible road for humanity is the search for a mutually beneficial trade relations on the basis of mutual respect, which means respect for the sovereignty of nations, the negation of neocolonialism. This is Charles McKelvey reflecting on the unfolding global popular socialist revolution forged by our peoples in defense of humanity.